Well, hello and welcome back after your lunch. I hope you enjoyed it, feeling refreshed. As someone who closely follows government and public sector use of all things technology, I'm acutely aware that we go through these endless repetitions of hype cycles. In the world of smart cities, the narrative goes that the future of our urban spaces is installing Internet of Things networks, it's about driverless cars, it's about urban sensors that unleash huge amounts of new data that will enable citizens to engage better with their urban environments and connect them with their city leaders. And when we come to digital government, we find that the narrative goes that we live at a time when a certain number of really game-changing technologies have now reached a state of maturity. We've got cloud, we've got the Internet of Things, we've got mobile, we've got web applications, we've got just basic online transactions. And if we can just get the right technology, it will unleash again those data insights that enable smarter ways of working that we know we all need. We start with the technology, it gives us data, and then we can find those better ways of working. And it's a wonderful way of thinking about the world, but we always know what happens with a hype cycle. It's followed by disappointment, sometimes crushing disappointment. And in the world of smart cities, time and time again, we look around the world and we see cities that have spent millions of pounds on the latest technology to give them even more data that they have absolutely no idea how to use. In the realms of digital government, there's some notable and very good exceptions, but we often see organizations have taken some of that new technology and bolted it onto exactly the same old ways of working. And what that ends up doing is turning an inefficient process into a digital and more expensive inefficient process. It's also very difficult that it's a really disempowering message if we think this starts with the technology. If I stand in front of a city leader or a public service manager and say, you know, the solution to your problem is that you need to talk to some IT experts, what on earth does that do for the public sector reform agenda? You know, we cannot delegate it to the IT department. So how do we think about this? If this narrative of starting with technology, going to data, and then thinking about ways of working is wrong, well, we have to flip it around. We have to start with the question, how do you want to work? What are fundamentally better, more efficient, more citizen-centric, more cost-effective ways of working? Second question, what data do you need in order to be able to work in those ways? And then the last question, the final question, is what technology do you need in order to give you that data so that you can work in those ways? That is the empowering message. And if you think of the world in that way, you realize that the critical step is not the technology, because the technology can do whatever we want it to do. That's the wonder of living today, not any specific instance of cloud or mobile or IoT. It's that we can take for granted it can do what we want. So it comes back down to the data if we want to enable smarter ways of working. And my advice today would be, before we get carried away with new technology to give us new data, let's figure out how we overcome the barriers to using the vast quantity of data that already exists across the public sector. And you'll all be familiar with these barriers. There's technical barriers where, with some legacy systems, we just struggle to get the data out in the first place. There's data barriers where we extract data from different systems and it's in different standards, so we're comparing the digital equivalent of apples and oranges. There's cultural barriers where public sector organizations were historically set up to serve a certain number of people, to do a certain number of things. And so there's a mental leap, a cultural leap, an organizational leap to think that we should be systematically collaborating on a wide number of issues. And then there's legal barriers, or perceived legal barriers, where frankly, Data Protection Act and other bits of legislation are really intimidating if we want to do radically different things. We worry whether we can use the data in the first place. But I'd like to make the case today that we can do a lot if we overcome those barriers. If we can figure out how to join up, analyze, and act upon the data we already have, we can enable tried and tested, proven ways of working that we already know about. And I'll just tell you about three of those examples and three areas of the UK that are already embarked on the journey of overcoming them. So we start with an obvious one, shared services, probably the least glamorous and exciting sort of part of public sector reform, but we know it works. According to the LGA, 2015 alone, £357 million saved by English local authorities by sharing teams, resources, assets. And when I've gone out and I've spoken to local authorities and people like yourselves, some people in this room, and said, show me how you go about using your data, they'll often bring up a screen like the one we've got behind me, and they'll show me a map of their area with their GIS team. And they'll say, Eddie, look, we're plotting the data on this particular problem, this particular opportunity, this particular risk. You see in that northeast corner, this area of deprivation, we're concentrating our resources there. And it's brilliant, fantastic that they're doing that. And then I say, what does the data look like for that problem on the other side of the boundary? 9 times out of 10, they say, well, we don't have that data. Now, if you think, how are we meant to have a sensible conversation about sharing, scaling shared services if we cannot see the scale of the opportunity, the demand, the problem, the issue on the other side of the boundary? It's what I call the jigsaw effect. In the public sector, everybody's got their little piece of the jigsaw, but in very few instances do we have the ability to take a step back across a whole region and see how an issue transcends those boundaries. And one area where we're trying, and Nesta is trying to help them join up that jigsaw, is in the northeast. At very early stages, but we're working with the Digital Catapult, with 7 local authorities, some of whom I see in the room today, and they've asked us to help them look at the issue of alcohol abuse. And clearly that's a huge umbrella term, many specific issues lying underneath it. But we're looking at what would happen if each of those local authorities, if police, if ambulance services, could stitch together all of their data so that you could see how those issues transcend the whole region. An example might be if you're trying to correlate licensed premises with criminal activity, health issues, social issues that might relate to them. It's very difficult, if you look at one boundary of your local authority, see an area of where a particular problem occurs, but you don't see that there's a licensed premise literally 2 streets away in the neighbouring local authority. So this Friday, we're getting those organisations together, we're looking at what data they've got, and we're seeing what issues could we try and deal with in an evidence-based way if we had that complete view. Early days, but that jigsaw, overcoming the jigsaw effect, I think will be vitally important. The other way that we know you can do more and better with less in public services is just to target your resources where they're most needed. It's kind of the Ron Sill test, no-brainer. If you've only got a certain amount of resources, put them where risk is highest, put them where they're needed most. And you can do that if you can get the data together to see where those issues are. And again, a Nesta project that we're working on in London, we're working with the GLA and 14 London boroughs on a pilot to prove whether a London office of data analytics could deliver value to the capital to do precisely that. And London office of data analytics, LODA as we call it, would have the ability to pull in data from all 32 boroughs, from the police, from the fire brigade, from health services, so that those data sets could be overlaid on maps, so that you could start seeing where risk was highest and so you could intervene in the most effective way. And we think we've got to start with a pilot. We need to choose an issue to prove whether that works. And the issue that the boroughs asked us to work with them on was unlicensed HMOs, so unlicensed houses of multiple occupancy. And many of you may be aware that unlicensed HMOs correlate highly with conditions where landlords are frankly exploiting vulnerable tenants, health hazards, fire hazards, sometimes financially exploited tenants as well. So that's one problem. It's also a problem because this is a missed revenue opportunity for the boroughs. Because according to the GLA, there in some boroughs there's up to 15,000 HMOs in London per borough, but only 10% of them are correctly licensed. So think what you could do if you could just move the needle ever so slightly. Think what revenue could it raise. Think of how you could protect more vulnerable tenants. And the way we're going about it is to say, well, the answers are already out there. We don't need new technology. We just need to talk to frontline building inspectors. Talk to a frontline building inspector and say, tell me, what does a high-risk property look like? What's your gut instinct? And they'll list off factors like saying, well, it'll be above a commercial premise like a kebab shop, it's high risk. If it's in a certain student area of town, it's high risk. If it's more than 3 stories, it's high risk, etc., etc. And then we're saying to all of those boroughs, well, which data sets do you have that relate to these mental list of criteria that the building inspectors have? And they've given us about 60 different data sets. And then we've gone back to the building inspectors and said, okay, of those different data sets, which do you think are most important? Rank them in order. And what we're now working on, we've got to the stage where we're taking all known historic cases of HMOs, comparing them against all those data sets so that they can be weighted very, very accurately to create an algorithm that allows you to plug in any new address in London and tell to what how likely it is to be an unlicensed HMO. The idea being that you can intervene in those areas of higher risk sooner than would otherwise be possible. I'll come back in the new year and tell you whether or not that worked. Fingers crossed, fingers crossed. And then the third area of how to reform public services that we know and love, the holy grail, prediction and prevention, or prediction and early intervention. So the Minority Report for public services, if that film had had a happy ending, as I often say. And one area that I see doing this, or embarking on a journey to try and predict and intervene early, is Essex County Council. And Essex County Council have noticed that some of their most deprived wards have a high rate of children who at the age of 5 are not school ready. And so they've thought to themselves and said, well, wouldn't it be great if we could predict which children were most likely not to be school ready so that we could then make earlier interventions to support those families, because it's such a crucial time in a person's educational journey. And so what they've done is literally pick the most disadvantaged ward with a level of deprivation of 39%. They've taken the data on children who were age 5 in 2015 and then looked across the public sector in securely, legally, ethically, to make sure to see what data they had on all those children for the 4 preceding years, to see if they can find data sets that correlate with that higher risk. If they can, the idea is that they'll design interventions to support the next generation of children. So again, predicting early, intervening early to minimize harm and to deal with issues when they're manageable and it's not too late to resolve. I could go on and give you many, many other case studies of this, but the point I want to make is that none of these things have required ambitious, crazy use of new technology. None of this is Hadoop, okay? It's often Excel spreadsheets. And the smart part of a smart city has never been the technology, it's the people. And people's ability to ask the right questions, to know how to use data, and actually in some cases to have the courage to act upon what the data tells you. Because for all our talk around the wonders of evidence-based policymaking, I say this having worked in sort of a Westminster think tank for a number of years and realized that far more often we see policy-based evidence-making. Which is not desirable at all. So we need to have the courage to act upon that data when we see it. And as I said, there are other examples. I call this presentation The Rise of UK Data Analytics, because we are getting there with these techniques. And I'm delighted in just a moment I'll be handing over to Eric Applewhite, who will be able to talk to you about what I think is probably the most advanced initiative of this kind happening in the UK at the moment, Greater Manchester's GM Connect programme. So I'll just leave you with the final note that I do believe that technology will be radically transformative on all our journeys as we're thinking about public sector reform. But I'd urge you all, before we get carried away, please, please, please don't lose sight of what can be done by nailing the basics. Thank you very much.